Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Rafael Stone played the Kevin Durant trade perfectly, and we're going to hear why in just a couple of minutes here. Brian Windhorst on how Kevin Durant handled his end of it to help make this a really good deal for the Rockets. This was back on May 21st. This was Rafael Stone, I believe right after he did his press conference to end the season. He and Ime Udoka met with the media, and Stone in that press conference said a couple of things that were interesting. He said, bet on continuity, which if you had bet on continuity, you would have lost your money. And also kind of dismissed those stats, the data that one of the reporters brought up about all the lineups the Rockets had and all the ones that didn't have Jalen Green in them were the best performing lineups. So he kind of dismissed that.
Oh, that's right. He thought it was dumb.
Rafael Stone poured a lot of cold water on things in that press conference. Shortly thereafter, he did an interview with Vanessa Richardson, Rocket sideline reporter on Space City Home Network. And Vanessa asked him about the what's the bar that needs to be cleared in order for a trade for a superstar to happen.
Versus getting a superstar. I'm not going to ask you what you're going to do because I know that you wouldn't tell me, but what factors play into that decision?
Well, the superstar thing is like, it's largely, in the NBA, it's largely points, which is at least as much, points are a factor of who shoots. Some of that is like offense driven. So it ends up being cyclical. Like, you know, if you engineer your offense around one player, they're going to score more, they're going to get more assists. I don't think that's in Ime's DNA. Mm. So some of this is like just how we're going to go about it. I think we're going to be a team-focused team. That doesn't mean we won't do a trade for a really talented player. But I also think we have really, really talented players on this roster. And I think they're all improving. And so before we trade one or two or three or four of those guys for a more veteran guy, we want to make sure that we give this current group room to grow. The huge caveat to all of that is the job is to win championships. That is my one and only goal. And if we think there's a better path than continuity, we would pursue it. But right now that bar is pretty high.
Okay, bar's high, but it was cleared this weekend.
Right, and the bar really wasn't that high in terms of what they had to give up. Right. I think that's the biggest thing, is that any notion that somehow the Rockets were just going to sell the farm to go after Kevin Durant, I think would have been a bad notion to have. If the price had been, as it one time was, the Suns at one time were understandably hoping to get multiple impact players, young star players, whatever it might be, and the Rockets are loaded with guys with huge potential there. What we feared was, oh man, the picks are the picks, and I don't worry too much about the first round picks, but if they were to give up two or three of their young core players, that would be bad. Would be just trying way too hard to bring a guy into a situation that isn't as fertile and doesn't have as much potential with just the addition of one piece. I think nothing that Rafael Stone said there seems to contradict what they ended up doing.
Yeah,
it's the bar has to be the right situation if you're going to go after a superstar, and they didn't have to give up an arm and leg to get Kevin Durant.
Yeah, no, that cut almost lays out exactly what happened. You know, which is, hey, we love these guys, but the bar is kind of high. But I got to win championships. Colin, if you could play the most interesting part of that cut to me. And we don't need to play the whole thing. I'll down cue you on it. But play it from the beginning again.
Is at least as much, points are a factor of who shoots. Some of that is like offense driven. So it ends up being cyclical. Like, you know, if you engineer your offense around one player, they're going to score more. They're going to get more assists. I don't think that's in Ime's DNA.
There you go. Right there. That's the interesting part to me. is where in that, and that was the interesting part when Raphael Stone said that, which is, I don't think, talking about getting a superstar and having that guy be the center of the universe,
yeah,
I don't think that's in Ime's DNA. I was pointing that out the first time as evidence that there wouldn't be a trade. I think it's interesting now that the trade has been made, one, that Ime Udoka is obviously very fond of this particular superstar. So what changes here? Ime's DNA, or does Kevin Durant, you know, is Kevin Durant walking into a situation where he's going to be more blending into an ensemble than it's going to be this KD-centric thing? That's the part that sounds like it's not in Ime's DNA, is bringing in somebody who all of a sudden is going to be the focal point with the ball in his hands all the time.
Right, that everything's got to revolve around me. And that's where James Harden wouldn't have been a great fit for developing the kind of ball that Ime Udoka wants to play. Whereas with Durant, I don't worry at all about Durant coming in and all of a sudden demanding that, you know, everything revolve around him. And it is important to note, too, when I've been saying he immediately makes the offense better.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, obviously it's never as simple as just plucking a guy in there, but they got to work on all the teamwork elements of it. But he immediately addresses a lot of the issues that were holding the Rockets back last year. But we also, in why this doesn't just lay out a perfect path to a championship, is that those young players do have to continue to develop. Şengün has to continue to develop. Amen Thompson is potential future superstar. He's got to diversify a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's not like it's as simple and cut and dry as, oh, this was the missing piece. But you can very clearly see the path. There are obstacles in the way. But it just makes a lot of sense without having to really think about it too hard.
One of the guys that just went out the door in the deal was your leading scorer. So it's not like he's having to squeeze in and find his shots. A bunch of shots just went out the door with Jalen Green. So there are shots to be had. You and I spent part of the show yesterday talking about some of the deals the Rockets have made over the last 10 or so years to try to get over the hump. Granted, the three trades we were comparing this to were all done in the Daryl Morey era, but I think it's worth bringing up. Those three trades involved some degree of having to adapt style and having to adapt roles with guys, because Daryl was big on just getting talent in the building and then we'll figure out the schematic stuff. This is as seamless as it gets for me when it comes to bringing in a future Hall of Fame, still very productive player. Dwight Howard, you had to adapt because he thought he was Hakeem Olajuwon at times. Chris Paul, you had to adapt just because you had two primary ball handlers on the floor with him and James Harden. And then Russell Westbrook, you practically had to tear down your team just to accommodate the fact that he couldn't shoot the ball outside of 10 feet.
Yeah, you had to trade away Clint Capella.
Yeah.
There was no place for Capella on the team.
You had to play a small ball lineup
the whole time. That's right, yeah. Remember the COVID small ball era?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember those electrifying 3 weeks in February where it felt like, this is the path.
I was at the very first game in L.A. It was my bachelor party. We went to see the Rockets play the Lakers and the Suns.
Uh-huh.
And I was at the very first game after the Clint Capella trade, and they blew out the Lakers in L.A. And I remember being talking to some Rockets people like, oh, take that, critics. And then they lost by 40 the next night to Phoenix.
Microball.
Microball. Yeah. But this is, if we're comparing it to these other times where the team, granted a different group of Rockets, but it brought in superstars, this is as seamless as it gets. Durant slides right in here, man. Durant, and makes everybody better in the process. So I'm excited about this. How did the price get so low on Kevin Durant? Well, according to Brian Windhorst, it's because Kevin Durant himself was able to drive the price down.
The Rockets had this happen because Kevin Durant controlled this process. Last winter, the Warriors were ready to trade for him, and he said, I don't want to go there, and they backed off. Last week, the Timberwolves were on the verge of trading for him.
I don't want to go there.
And Ant Edwards. And Ant Edwards could have tried to talk him into it. He did not. He said, that's not my place. KD, you do what you do. And so the price came down. The Rockets moved in. Mm. That's how you elevate yourself as a team. Mm-hmm. You buy low, and you have a great opportunity.
You know, it's really like a Jane Austen novel. It was that, the Suns were desperate to marry off their daughter because she's an old hag by now. You know, you got to come on. You got to get married. And Kevin Durant keeps saying, no. That's just like I'm a different gal, okay? I'm ahead of my time. I'm going to decide who I go to.
Yep.
And he waited until the perfect, handsome young gentleman who was both successful and polite, had impeccable manners, and could cite Shakespeare and all that, came along, and it was the Houston Rockets.
And that man's name was Alperen Şengün. Yes.
Yes.
That's who I like to, that's who I like to envision that description, describing.
I'm so happy.
Yeah. The funniest part of that cut to me was from Windhorst was when Anthony Edwards could have tried to talk him into it to going to Minnesota and chose not to. I respect Anthony Edwards. That is a hard sell on somebody that doesn't want to go to Minnesota to come to Minnesota of all places. Anthony Edwards knew his he knew what lane to stay in.
Remember how impressed Carlos Correa was with Minnesota? He said, "Well, we have Netflix. Yeah, you know,
can't get that anywhere else.
I can depart this city in my mind anytime I want with Netflix."
Yeah. And then he departed twice, once to San Fran and once to the Mets. They both flunked him on his physical, and then he went back because the Twins offered him the most money.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind living in Minneapolis. I don't think I might take a 2-year sabbatical in Minneapolis. I think
It's not bad.
It's my favorite of the Canadian cities. I would say I would go live in Minneapolis, Toronto,
Green Bay.
Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah, like those are the Canadian cities where I feel like, okay, the climate in the summer is probably a little bit nicer. And
Madison, Wisconsin, very underrated. It's a good town.
Yes.
Good
college. I don't think of Wisconsin as Canada. Minneapolis, for some reason, I think of it as
feels like Canada to
Minnesota
you.
Minnesota in general, yeah.
Yeah. Last one here. This is Shams, Sharanya. So we looked at the past, you know, Rafael Stone hinting at something like this. We looked at the present, the trade actually going down. Now let's look to the future. Shams Charania gets us a little excited here, says KD may take less than the max when the extension time comes around.
Kevin Durant is eligible for, I think it's a 2-year, $121 million extension. Like, will it be all of that? Will it be a part of that? Like, it would not surprise me to see how, you know, Kevin Durant is approaching this. This is a partnership. I think there's a goal in mind here to end his career in Houston on both sides, on both fronts. And how can both sides be best suited to do that in a way? Pat, in the NBA now, like we're throwing words like second apron, first apron. I mean, what the NBA is dealing with right now, what teams are dealing with is essentially some version of a hard cap. And so how can he make it easy on Houston? How can Houston do right by him? I think that will be a conversation at some point this offseason.
Okay, do you think it's more likely, Seth? I 100% think that KD and his representation have talked contract with the Rockets, 100%, the future looks like. If you had to bet, do you think that KD is here on a max contract, that 2-year, 120, whatever it was, or does Kevin Durant play ball with the Rockets to try to keep them below that second apron that they talk about that essentially creates a hard cap on teams?
Boy, I gotta separate my wants from my needs here and be realistic about it. It's a hard day for me to kind of just accept reality where Jeremy Pena is looking like a guy who might only be here a couple of years after this at most. I think that Kevin Durant, is he going to drive a hard bar? Is he going to play at a discount? He doesn't feel like a play at a discount type of guy.
He doesn't. He doesn't.
So I'm gonna say realistic, and I will not hold it against him. I think it's more likely that he gets the max.
I was really hoping you would say that you thought he would take less than the max.
So you could set me up for disappointment?
No. Because that means we will have done a show today in which we predict that Jeremy Pena, beloved former postseason MVP of the city, is going to be a mercenary. And Kevin Durant, of all people, who up until like 3 days ago, everybody hated him here in town, is going to be this benevolent, philanthropic, making sure that the Fertittas get taken care of in this whole thing, taking a pay cut.
I feel like the deal is already agreed to in principle. I think there's a real good chance that they already had it all hammered out. There was enough time, and the groundwork was laid. As you pointed out, the Ime Udoka extension might have been more about creating the ideal scenario for Kevin Durant than it was about some kind of reaction to James Dolan trying to put his dirty mitts all over us.
Yeah.
The re-signing of Steven Adams, which they could have done regardless, but Durant really likes Steven Adams. I feel like part of all that might have been, okay, in theory or in principle, we have a good idea of what the contract's going to look like.
I will say this, that you lay it out that way, bringing up Udoka, Steven Adams gets re-signed. Roy Al Ivey, Texas guy, remained on the staff, probably could have gone to some other place. Very highly thought of assistant on Udoka's staff. DJ Augustine coming in and being part of the front office here, another guy with history with Durant. If ever there were a scenario, and by the way, a good team with a good nucleus that I think has the potential to win an NBA title, if ever there were a situation that were set up for Durant to go, all right, give me 45 a year, not 60, it would be this. That's a lot of money, though, man.
That's a lot of money.
Even for somebody with a lot of money, that's a lot of money.
Durant's pretty frugal. The entire time he was in Oklahoma City, he lived in a duplex. It wasn't like he had a huge mansion or anything. I mean, frugal by professional athlete standards, maybe. Yeah. But I don't know. That's a hard one. I hate even forecasting that because it almost turns it into like, is this guy selfless?
If he doesn't do it, you're mad at the guy. Yeah.
I'm not going to be mad at him if he gets the max available or allowable.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Do y'all think Thompson will be demonstrably better than Green when it's all said and done? I'm assuming Thompson is Amen Thompson. I think he's demonstrably better than Jalen Green right now. He's the until they acquire Kevin Durant, he was the best player on the team, including Şengün, in my opinion.
My four-person power ranking of Thompsons would be Amen Thompson, the Thompson twins at 2 and 3, and then Jalen Green below with those three. So it's a three-person Thompson.
Jalen Green Thompson.
By Jalen Green.
Yeah.
Were the Thompson twins actually twins?
The group. The singers? The singers were actually a three-person group, if I'm not mistaken, which is ironic. I'll double check.
They not
that.
Understand the way like just nomenclature.
Possibly
works
not,
in
but
families?
they made a couple good one-hit wonder. Amen Thompson himself is a twin. I would put Asar Thompson.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in twins named Thompson rankings, both Thompson brothers above the Thompson twins.
Bingo. Yes. Yeah. Hell yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Coming up next, CJ Stroud was at Fanatics Fest. Remember when he gave Caleb Williams unwanted advice after a Texans game earlier this season? He got asked to give Caleb Williams advice again. There's a funny part to this. But then the full cut, he actually gave the full advice he would give to Caleb and other young quarterbacks. Also, expectations for 2025 for CJ. What are they? We will get to that coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
The Thompson twins, Seth, right here.
Yeah, you got to wait a while for the payoff.
You do. I probably should have had Colin bump it up to the refrain. But we're here now.
For anybody that wasn't listening, they would have had no clue. What the hell are we? Was there a format change? Have Sean and Seth gone to easy listening? What's the deal here?
We would be two hella easy listening DJs, man. We would be amazing. So, this is the Thompson Twins, who were a three-person band back in 1985. And this was their big hit, Hold Me Now. Joe Leeway, Alana Curry, and Tom Bailey. None of them named Thompson.
Oh, okay.
Definitely not twins.
That's a rabbit hole hit. I'll be in after the show.
Hell yeah, man.
This is their only exactly hit.
What's that?
This is their only hit, you said?
No. They had a couple of them. This is their big hit. Yeah, this is their big hit. Yep.
If I have to guess, they've got super teased up wavy hair. And
yes.
A lot of just... They're wearing some kind of a like futuristic looking
all of it.
Jacket with big shoulders.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of them even looks like they've got like a belt or some strap that comes down diagonally across their chest on the whole thing.
Oh, that's good. That's key.
Yeah. Like a belt across their waist and a belt over their shoulder. So anyways.
The key was to try to look like some modern version of a fairy tale prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what chicks dug back then.
Back in the 80s, man.
Make this guy as androgynous as possible, okay?
Those were good times, man. Those were good times. All right, so there you go. That all stemmed from someone asking if Amen Thompson would be eventually demonstrably better than Jalen Green. And the right answer to that is yes, he already is.
There are
Jalen
at least
Green.
Two Thompsons better than Jalen Green. Amen Thompson and the Thompson twins.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
None of whom are named Thompson.
And nor are they twins. They're not even two people. Mm-hmm. They're three. CJ Stroud, not a Twin, best as I know, was at Fanatics Fest this past week. This is pretty funny. If you recall, CJ Stroud gave advice to Caleb Williams coming off the field or meeting at midfield after the Texans' 19-13 win over the Bears on Sunday Night Football earlier this year. And Caleb really wasn't having any of it.
And it was a very big brother type of advice where a lot of people pointed out accurately that CJ Stroud is, I think, less than a year older than Caleb Williams, basically the same age.
Caleb might, I don't know. Could Caleb be older than CJ Stroud?
No, CJ's older than him, but it's not by much.
It's not by much.
If I recall properly.
And how did he lead into it with Caleb in the middle of the field, Seth? He led into it with a way that would rub most people the wrong way.
He started off with, like, don't worry about those mistakes
That's what it was. All right,
thanks for noticing, Dad.
Yeah. So at Fanatics Fest, Kay Adams asked C.J. Stroud, hey, what advice would you have to give to Caleb Williams? Funny little quip at the beginning, but it actually does lead into some substantive advice for Caleb Williams.
I don't know if Caleb likes my advice, so not this player. like I just said, like, teams, you know, they prepare more, they know what you're good at. They try to just cut that off. It's like playing basketball. If you find out a guy can't go left, they're going to try to force you left. So whatever your weaknesses are, whatever you've put on tape and film, that's what defensive coordinators are watching every single day, and they're just trying to find twists and schemes, and the main thing, they want you to extend plays every time. And if you learn how to just, like, sit in the pocket, and when it's not down, like, we're playing in the shell league, like, it's cover four, cover two, cover six, cover five, like, all these different two high coverages. If it's not there, bro, just get it out your hand, you know. And I told you on the field, and just the less hits you take, the better, you know, because it's a long, long season. I know you went through that, you know, because it's 17, 18 long weeks, and then you add playoffs on there, it gets long. So the more you can get down, get rid of the ball, check it down, and just be smart, like, that's the advice I would give, you know. And I think you're gonna do great, like you always done. So
and obviously, ironically, the advice that he gave him at the beginning of the season ended up being advice that CJ, I don't want to paint a picture of CJ, you know, causing all of his own sacks or anything, but he took a lot of sacks. He took the second most sacks in the league after Caleb Williams. One of the things with CJ is so much of it was pressure right up the gut, where it's really hard to avoid it. You're just, okay, yeah, you want to get rid of the ball quickly, but you need the pocket to hold up just for a little bit. I think that when CJ talks about those shell coverages, without getting into, if you don't know what cover two or cover four is or anything, just know that they're taking away the deep ball. They're keeping everything in front of you. They're trying to turn you into a dink and dunk quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that CJ saw that in his second season, and it's really a show of respect, if anything. But it's something that Pat Mahomes had to go through. Pat Mahomes was, when teams decided to play nothing but cover two versus Pat Mahomes, he had a hard time that year, and he wasn't the same guy until he really learned to live by the cliches. Don't go broke. You won't go broke taking a profit. Take what the defense gives you. All of that. CJ was doing a good job of it initially when he had Stephon Diggs. And it's a lot easier when you got Stephon Diggs, where CJ would, there'd be bad pass protection, he'd throw a tight window pass to Stephon Diggs because he was there and he was available.
Yeah.
It was a lot harder in the second half of the season after Stephon Diggs went down to live on a diet of that. The other part where Bobby Slowick and the rest of the offense didn't hold up their end of the bargain is, hey, if teams are going to play a bunch of zone and just try to take away the deep ball, then you better be able to run the ball. You don't even have to be awesome, because it's easy pickings. And, like, it's easy to run the ball versus cover two unless it's a really, really good defense. And they could not do that.
Yeah.
That was one of the most frustrating things about going against the Titans. The Titans were horrendous against the run, and the Texans could not do a damn thing against them.
Yeah.
They were just getting – no, they couldn't run. They were getting destroyed. Joe Mixon's getting tackled in the backfield.
Right.
CJ did advance – in understanding how to play that way. And college quarterbacks are greedy for downfield. Extend the play. You send four vertical receivers and somebody's going to come open in college. It doesn't work that way in the NFL. And I think CJ did take advantage of it. But this year, that's why you don't just trade for Christian Kirk, a slide receiver. You draft a slot receiver in Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
Give him options. You draft a running back who's a receiving threat. You do all these things to give him options for when a team takes away what you really want to do.
Well, remember when Bobby Slowick was asked last year, Seth, at the probably about the time the offense was starting to unravel a little bit for this team?
Yeah.
Somebody asked him at a press conference, what exactly do you guys do well offensively? And his answer was shot plays, like deep shots, you know? Yeah. So like the one, and I almost feel like Bobby didn't really have an answer, and that was the first thing that popped into his head possibly, because that was when the offense was really slogging through games.
Yeah.
But if indeed that's his answer, it's the antithesis of what you're talking about the team needing to do to be successful. Their strength is shot plays.
Bread and butter.
Well, and you got a quarterback. Your strength is shot plays. You got an offensive line that can't protect your quarterback. You know?
Well, and what they didn't really help him out with either, and partly it is, when the pass protection's as bad as it is, it's hard to have a whole lot of options. That goes back to Bobby Slowick as well. The pass protection being as bad as it was had some systemic issues to it. But, you're wondering the whole first part of the season, like, okay, can we develop some kind of a short game? Can I see some crossers and some mesh and all this other stuff?
Nope.
And you just didn't see it develop, and they made stabs at it in the second half of the season. But Bobby Slowick himself, I think sometime around either the midseason or around the bye week or whatever, admitted that they didn't adjust quickly enough to all of the shell coverages they were seeing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, why didn't adjustment even have to be made? You had Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, and Nico Collins in your wide receiving core.
Right.
Did you expect that teams were just going to roll the dice and play man against everybody?
Yeah.
I don't know what you expected.
Yep.
But that was poor planning. That it was somehow a surprise to you that you were seeing as much cover two as you did. Yeah, the shot plays come by and large because Nico Collins can beat any kind of
coverage. That's exactly right.
You know?
That's exactly right. One more from CJ here in a second. Our producer today, Colin Neal, who's in for Ben, says CJ is a month and a half older than Caleb Williams. So they're about the same age.
Yeah, CJ was born in October of 2021. My God.
Yes.
Caleb Williams was born in November of 2021.
No, 2001. Like, not 21.
No, 2021, Sean. They're toddlers, okay?
Last year was
just a case of that horrible age three.
I knew what you meant. I'm just heading off the text page to point out that they're not infants. Yeah.
They're recalcitrant, disobedient youth, yes.
AI can make them babies if we want them to. They can make anybody a baby on AI these days. Are you creeped out by those videos? Like I am, I'm creeped out by those videos.
I didn't know when you do YouTube videos, you have to check a box as if something was digitally altered that would be misrepresenting. And it was a video where I did that Photoshop of me and Simone Biles on vacation in Rome
in front of the Roman Colosseum.
With my arm around Simone Biles' shoulder.
Yeah,
I felt like I didn't have to disclose. It's if it's digitally altered in a way that would fool the viewer.
Yeah,
and I feel like. Anybody that would have been fooled by that picture. Plus, I was shrunk down to 5'4", so I looked only a little bit taller than Simone Biles.
Yeah. That would be the big part, because otherwise I would believe everything in that you were hanging out with Simone Biles in Rome. I'm like, this is totally believable.
Yeah.
One more from CJ Stroud. What are your expectations for 2025?
I can't say that like last year was a good or a bad year, in my opinion, but internally my expectations for this year are probably higher than a lot of people's outside expectations, just because, I mean, for me to be able to, you know, do some of the things that, you know, God has allowed me to do and to be blessed enough to win Rookie of the Year and to be in the playoffs twice, I know the sky's the limit. Like, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, I would have like, man, you have...
I'll take that.
Yeah, like, I have no shot to be who I am. I would have never thought, but it's nothing but, like Eli said, and preparation and the hard work when nobody sees. So I think my year three expectations are, you know, whatever I really make them. So
he, in that sit down, he says, like Eli said, at least three or four times in the cuts that I've seen and that we've pulled here, he really was vibing whatever Eli Manning was saying sitting up on that panel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. He said, like, in like multiple answers, like, you know, like Eli said. You know, like Eli said.
And, did you watch that whole interview?
I didn't watch the whole interview. Okay. I just saw some of the cuts that Houston stresses.
Or the whole panel?
No.
It was Peyton and Eli had kind of like a little playful banter going back and forth where they were teasing each other, and I found it distracting. I was like, hey, I'm here for the young guys to talk, okay? They did give some really good clips. Peyton and Eli had really good advice for both of them.
So that's where – so you said earlier, like, CJ – just comes across different sitting up there. He was sitting next to Bryce Young and Caleb Williams. You watched the whole thing, and that kind of came through in the,
I thought
in the panel
so.
As well? Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and like, I think that they all gave great answers. I think CJ gave, I'm biased, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
But the funny part was at the beginning. I should go back and grab this today. The Peyton Manning is talking about those three young quarterbacks are and playing as a rookie, and he's like, and you know, and that's how CJ was supposed to have the awesome. That was how CJ was able to have the awesome rookie year that he did. And you know, Bryce and Caleb too. Like,
he
threw him at the end.
We need that. That's it. Thanks for the platitudes, buddy. Yeah.
When I was looking up Caleb Williams' age, guess what? I'm not gonna. The second prompt when you Google somebody, I'm always intrigued by the what prompts come up first. The second prompt is Caleb Williams autosexual? Sean, I have a question for you. Is Caleb Williams autosexual, and what is autosexual?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question.
According to AI, which is notoriously wrong, Caleb Williams has come out as autosexual. Autosexuality refers to a sexual orientation where individuals experience primary sexual attraction and desire towards themselves.
That's what I was going to say. Auto means self. Yeah.
AI got bilked by a brilliant troll. Yeah, by a brilliant fake report.
Okay. Well, I'm an autosexual then. I love myself, you know?
Primarily?
Yeah,
more
Amy,
than anybody
Amy,
else?
Amy would say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. We'll find out what the guys on In the Loop got going on. When Alex Bregman signed with the Red Sox, when June rolled around, I'm guessing he was not going to – I'm guessing he would not have guessed he'd find himself on this list. We will tell you what it is coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. So it's what's today? June 24th? June 24th. So we're about a month away from the MLB trade deadline. And fortunately, for yet another season, the Astros are a relevant, soon-to-be playoff team that should be making some decisions here at the trade deadline. We'll talk about the Astros in just a little bit. What I tease into this segment, I want to make sure I hit. When Alex Bregman signed with the Boston Red Sox, 3 years, $120 million, opt-outs after each year, going to a great baseball town with rich history and all those things, Seth, I'm guessing that when June 24th rolled around, he probably could have guessed that maybe he'd be injured, you know, like that happens, but I'm guessing he would not have guessed that he would be listed as the number one trade deadline option for teams seeking to strengthen their squad. ESPN has 50 trade deadline targets around MLB. The Astros are buyers in this piece, not sellers, obviously. The team that Alex Bregman chose to go to, the top two players on the list are Red Sox, including Alex Bregman, third baseman, Boston Red Sox. Now, the article admits there's only a 10% chance of Bregman being traded. But the mere fact that he's on this list, the mere fact that he went to a team that would be discussed as a seller, I'm guessing the Boston experience has not gone quite as Bregman had planned. And the petty part of me says, well, maybe you should have taken the 6 years, 156 that the Astros offered you. You'd be a much happier camper right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, no, I think Bregman's still happy with the deal he got.
Yeah.
And that he's probably now has the ability to go to, after he gets traded, he'd get traded to a contender.
Yeah.
And then after that, he'd still have the option to decide whether he wants to stay with that contender or go off to a better deal somewhere else. So I think there's still the upside for him of getting a more lucrative deal than the Astros offered, but also having some control over the situation.
If they were to not trade him, if they just kept him and the Red Sox kind of slogged their way through the rest of the year, I think there's a decent chance he could get moved. They just traded Rafael Devers. So yeah, there's no reason they wouldn't trade Alex Bregman if they got a great offer, especially as, to your point, he can opt out after the season. Probably drives down the price of what they can get for him. He'd be a real rental in that case. But this is going to be a strange August and September and October for Alex Bregman, who has never missed the playoffs. Well, he hasn't missed since 2017. In 2016, that was the year he got called up. But since 2017, Alex Bregman has never been able to make October vacation plans.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, like, maybe he wants to go to a bad team or stay with a bad team and then go to a bad team anyway.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just like, ah, go to Aruba. I like having October. I miss out on all this fall, all these pictures I see on Instagram.
Right.
Of, you know, my wife could be out there wearing a flannel shirt, holding a warm latte under a blossoming tree. Or
looking at foliage for sure. It's just wild. The best fits for Bregman, according to this article, well, the article says this: Bregman's been an elite big league hitter since he entered the league in 2016, but has leaned more into power this year with his highest isolated power since 2019. He was on a tear when he got hurt. I do feel bad for him about that. Most of his underlying power indicators, launch angle, velo, blah, 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 are at career highs. His $40 million salary and the chance to opt into two more years at $40 million significantly shortens the list of teams that would take on the deal. That's interesting. In this case, what they're saying is that the $40 million salary and his ability to actually opt into it scares off some teams because they can't afford a $40 million above-average third baseman.
Yeah, yeah.
I think some of the teams would view it like you are, Seth, like if they're trading for him. Like, this is almost like the Yankees and the Mets and the Tigers and the Cubs are all teams that are listed as the best fits. Detroit supposedly was right in the mix until the very end for Alex Bregman. They might look at this as a second chance to, you know, to get in front of Bregman and get a chance to, you know, show him what Detroit's all about. And then maybe he opts in. It's a risk. At this point, do you feel it's more likely that Alex Bregman opts in or opts out of next season, given the fact that he's going to wind up missing so much time with a soft tissue injury?
I think he opts in.
I do too.
I think does it say when the date is for when he has to opt in?
It's right after the season's over. I'm not sure. Yeah.
So he'll have, I mean, if he comes back and he's healthy and he goes on a tear, then
it changes things.
Yeah. If he goes on a tear and yet the Red Sox remain out of the playoffs, then I think he opts in.
Yeah.
He might be looking at the way the Red Sox are operating, trading away Devers and everything else, and wonder just, all right, if I got a chance at a team with better prospects, I miss being in the playoffs.
Yeah, so you said opts in. You think if he goes
opts out, so if he goes on a tear,
but the Red Sox
If he goes on a tear, he opts out. If he doesn't, if he just comes back and he's struggling to come back and everything, then 100% he'll opt in.
I think if he goes on a tear and he comes back, he's opting out regardless of what team he's on. I think if this injury still lingers, I think there's a decent chance he's on the Boston Red Sox again, Nick. Or at least opting into the deal and they trade him somewhere maybe or something like
that.
Yeah. The Astros are on this list. They're here. They are listed as the best fits for 9 different players on this list. They are all starting pitchers. There's not a single left-handed bat. Sandy Alcantara, Freddy Peralta, Seth Lugo of Kansas City is on here. Zach Gallen of Arizona, the Diamondbacks. He's been a Cy Young contender at times. There's a couple starting pitchers from the Diamondbacks. If you had to guess right now, does Dana Brown make a trade deadline trade this year?
Yeah, I think I think there's a lefty. I mean, Brown's talked about it, hinted at it. We don't still actually know exactly what the hell's going on with Yordan Alvarez,
dude.
So yes, I think he does. Everywhere the other trade deadline moves, I just want to see your guys coming off the IL. But rounding this lineup out and just getting the best out of everybody in your lineup, whether or not Yordan comes back, is you got to be able to just mix it up a little bit.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. So, and I think I think there's as good, if not a better chance, he makes a move for a starting pitcher just because they've got so many guys right now that probably should be in Sugarland in the rotation. Like all these guys, this starting rotation right now should be at the beginning of the year, barring injury, should be Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, Ronel Blanco, Hayden Wisniewski, and Spencer Arrighetti. And then with Lance McCullers coming back from his injury, making it a 6-man rotation. Their rotation right now is Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, Colton Gordon, Brandon Walter, Ryan Gusto, And then I guess Jason Alexander, if they're on a long stretch of games and they need to,
I forgot about Jason Alexander.
Six innings, two earned runs in that one start he had against Oakland or against whatever we're calling them these days. So, yeah, I think there's an arm in their future as well.
Where do you want Alex Bregman to go if he opts out?
I thought it was kind of fun that he was going to Boston and staying in the American League. I like when these guys stay in the American League. I don't need The Astros are still good enough to where I feel like Carlos Correa on the Twins isn't going to damage the season. Alex Bregman on the Red Sox isn't going to damage the season. You know, George Springer in the Blue Jays has not damaged a single season, the Astros, that he's been up there with the Blue Jays. So I like having them in the American League just to because you get to see them a little bit more and they matter a little bit more to you. Like Kyle Tucker being over – put it this way, Seth. I pay way closer attention – at the beginning of the year, I was paying much closer attention to what Alex Bregman was doing than Kyle Tucker. Because even though you play all these teams, and they play Tucker later this week, even though you play all these teams once, there's still way more of a feeling of there being this mythical wall in between the American League and National League when it comes to following those teams.
Would you rather see him go to the Yankees or an AL West team?
AL West. I'd like to see him. Okay. Yeah, AL West. I don't like guys going to the Yankees. I don't need that. Yeah. No, AL West, because then you'd see him even more. I like playing against these guys. It gives some juice.
Would you? Okay, so you'd rather see
what
him
about
go
you?
To
it
any
sounds
of those.
Like, it sounds like you'd like him on the Yankees instead of.
I don't actually want to see him all that much. Yeah. I like to enjoy it every now and then where you're like, oh, yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a Springer every now and then. You see him like, ah, there he is. Good for you.
Springer. Yeah. I get that. I think it'd be fun. It would juice up the division a little bit. This is a boring division right now, you know?
That's true. When I think about the AFC South, I was excited that the Titans chose Cam.
Yeah.
Just because it makes it more interesting.
Yes.
All right, we got something to bring some juice to this division.
As long as you have a team that you feel is the favorite, regardless of those moves, then let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's how I feel. I don't think that Bregman were to have signed with the Angels or the Mariners, I don't think it's costing the Astros the division, and I think it makes those games a little bit more fun. I was on Seattle radio yesterday. To talk about the Durant trade, but the host of the show also brought up the Mariners and the Astros. And when I was on with him a month ago, leading into one of those series, he asked me like, "How do Astros fans view the Mariners like in terms of the rivalry sort of thing?" And I'm like, "Behind the Yankees, behind the Rangers, you're at best number three." And if I thought long and hard enough, there's probably another American League team that we hate a little bit more than you. Yeah.
We don't think about you at all. Basically the whole thing. Yeah.
So then when I was back on yesterday, I think it was, he brought it up again. And at the time, the Astros were trailing the Mariners in the division when I said that earlier. And now that the Astros were up five games yesterday, he's like, yeah, I kind of get it.
Are they still Thunder fans up there? Do they cover the Thunder with any degree of regularity, or have they divorced it completely?
Good question. Didn't come up on the show with him yesterday. I don't know. I can only go from my experience, and Oiler fans probably have the same thing. Like as soon as my favorite team growing up, the Hartford Whalers, left to go to Carolina, I was done with them. Didn't watch them. Didn't care. Got mad when they won a Stanley Cup. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know. So yeah, I don't know. There are
a lot of Houstonians that were Tennessee Oilers fans for a little bit until they got a new team.
Yes.
So Seattle hasn't gotten a team back. That's where I wonder about whether they just kept their allegiance.
And there's not the geographic proximity, too, to where you saw a lot of Raider fans, like when they moved to L.A., like, it's a puddle jumper down to L.A. I can still root. Same state still, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Vegas, I think, is similar where you can get from the Bay Area to Vegas in an hour. You move from Seattle to OKC, you might as well be moving to Neptune. You know, it's it's very, very different. John Lopez, Reggie Atitula, they are here. They are in the house. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
Yep, good to see you. Reggie, how you doing?
Doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Doing all right.
Yeah.
I always happy to hear a Mad Men reference thrown in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's when Don Draper gets in the elevator and
with Pete, turns to he's his like, "I feel so, I'm so ashamed of you," or something to that effect. And he's like, "I don't think of you at all."
Haven't watched Mad Men.
It's a good one.
I know. I promised I would watch it like a year ago, and then I saw the subscription I'd have to get to watch it. I'm like, I don't feel like spending that.
You know how people? I'm sorry. You know how people rate series finales, the best series. I think they had the best series finale.
That's what I've heard
in history.
Yeah, Mad Men did. Okay.
It's up there. Yeah. It's up there, but it's not for everyone. I always describe it as a novel on TV, which does not necessarily appeal to everyone.
I think from what I've heard, I think I would like it, just based on what else I like.
The whole thing about that, I don't think about you at all, GIF, because you'll see that, Sean. I'll send it to you. You'll know what I'm
talking about. I've
seen
it.
Yeah, he actually was thinking about that kid a lot. That whole episode was about him trying to destroy that kid. So it was like, I don't think about you at all, when in reality, it was just a really good put down. Oh, I think the kid ended up cutting his ear off or something. Or his nipple.
Van Gogh
cut
himself.
His nipple off. Like, that sent it, that pushed him over the edge.
Yeah. So, boys, what is the question du jour?
Well, what's the most unfortunate time you ever dropped an F-bomb or a cuss word? Because
the president
dropped one this morning that kind of sending ripples.
You don't say.
And, of course, we have some local examples as well over the last
couple of days. Yeah. Boy, the most unfortunate one. Well, I remember when I cursed. I remember when I cursed to my parents at an age where I still wasn't supposed to curse, and I was angry, and I got the wooden spoon treatment that day. I got the wooden spoon,
I think,
thwack, right across my thigh.
Yeah, there was a time in a post game where we have the drop of it. Don't try looking for it, Colin. Where I told John Granato I dropped an F-bomb on a live broadcast.
Oh, I remember that.
That's right.
I remember
that. It was legendary.
You were getting like a refrigerator or something, right?
You're just kind of asking me to do it, Seth.
Oh, no, yeah. And it was good for business now that I know how it works on both sides. I felt bad about it. The worst time I ever did was when I was at my in-laws' house, and they have a really tricky set of stairs that have carpet on it. And I didn't realize it, but this is after they'd known me for like a decade or so. And but I slipped and fell and like hit the stairs and was sliding down these really steep stairs. And they heard me like lay out a string of expletives. And in their minds, I was this just good-natured guy that never got mad about anything. Yeah. And they saw that side of me for the first time. And I still regret it a little bit that they saw that side of me.
What's your go-to when it's, you know, like in something like a Seth situation there where you something happens suddenly and it's painful?
Mine is usually in Spanish.
Oh, it is?
That's when I revert to Spanish.
Okay.
Start cussing in Spanish.
Yeah.
That's a nice added layer of protection if you're around some of us that, I'm picking up.
Do you have a go-to, Reggie?
I mean, not necessarily. However, it made me think of, like, I think we all have, like, a favorite cuss word to utilize.
Yeah.
And it made me think of the fact that my favorite cuss word to utilize is not FCC usable.
Yeah.
However, there is another side of a coin, at least as I view it, which is the word crap, which you can say on FCC. Yeah. And I'm like, why is one good and the other isn't?
Yeah, right. It's a reputation.
Yeah.
The one word has a reputation.
I probably say the words bleep me more than any other expletive there is.
I like that. that's a good one. Mine is probably, especially like a fall down the stairs situation, is probably MF-er.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, MF-er.
And
you know,
mine, like, when I'm driving, is bleep sucker.
Oh!
Wow. Okay. Oh, so there's different words for different times.
Driving is bleep sucker. Yeah. General life, it's bleep me.
I'm bleep me a lot as well. I got that club in the bag too, for sure.
The word that's so awesome, the way they use it in the UK and in Australia, is the C word.
But
somewhere along the way, that used to be a pretty common swear word back in the 70s and 80s, and somewhere along the way it became like the worst possible non-racial thing you could say.
Somewhere as that word sails across the Atlantic Ocean, somewhere in the middle of the ocean, the vibe of it changes a little bit.
The way they say it, it's almost affectionately. Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
Like calling somebody a jerk over here.
And it's
know?
Like they say it with an O instead of a U.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, two O's.
a lot of punch to it, but also like they drop it and move.
Yeah.
Right? Like they don't stay there. It's just a stick and move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's more of a jab than it is a straight
Very
or a
nimble.
Hook.
Yeah. Very nimble.
Oh, but the text board, the first text that came in is gold. And
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm saving it.
All right.
My finger's been on the dump button in case one of
y'all
Yeah,
dude, I was going to say.
This is going to be a challenge.
This is going to be a very risque 1040 segment for you guys. Yeah. You're going to be walking that fine line.
I hadn't even thought about that, like the accidental.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I'm trying not to say it, and then I actually do say it. Okay.
Yeah.
I did not realize the level of difficulty.
I think I only cursed once on the radio. That's like my main fear, is cursing on the radio. I think I've only done it once. Have you done it before?
Once for sure.
Yeah.
and possible. I'm trying to remember the other one.
What's the back of your baseball card?
I have 2.5. Yeah, and the half is that I didn't say the word. However, in the not enunciating properly, it sounded like I said a word, which is, I mean, you might as well at that point, right? Like you might as well have, if you have people texting into the station and maybe, you know, sending emails to your boss about how you cussed on that.
There you go. There you go. Seth, I kind of have an idea what the back of your baseball card
looks like.
Like.
Yeah, I know. I feel like Bonnie Blue here talking in a room full of virgins. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I was really going to say it looks like Barry Bonds on the back of the baseball card.
I've had at least six. So they've all gotten dumped. Yeah. Thank you to our producers.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's beautiful. All right. We'll get out of your way, fellas. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Yeah. Antibodies and Bonnie Blue to you.
Hearty F-bomb to all of you kids out there.
You bleep.
Oh, there's a secondary thing happening right now, fellas, which is not just the inopportune time, but the colorful cuss word that you use.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's why I was curious what y'all's go-to is.
This is fun.
Yeah. All right. It's risky but fun. I like it.
Figgy's going to be on notice.
Yeah, big time. All right. We are done. We are out of time.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.